Welcome to Life Transformation Radio. This show is all about life transformations and our journey from where we were to why we are doing what we are doing today. We will discuss the hiccups, the roller coasters, and the blood, sweat, and tears that has been poured out while discovering our purpose. It is all about our transformation. Here is your host, Sean Douglas.
Good afternoon and good evening, and welcome to another episode of Life Transformation Radio. I'm your host, Master Resilience Implement, TEDx speaker, business positioning strategist, and author, Sean Douglas. This show is currently heard in over 70 countries. So I want to thank the listeners, thank the supporters, and thank you wherever you are listening from. Life Transformation Radio is all about our transformation. Here is where we tell the stories of why we're doing what we're doing. We highlight that transformational moment that changed our lives and how we use it to then transform others and elevate their lives as well. You can listen to us live right here on the Blog Talk Radio Network Tuesday through Friday at 5:30 p.m. Eastern Time. So if you're joining us live, thank you so much for catching us live. You can also join our Facebook community for any updates or interact with the guests that I bring on the show. You can join it at Life Transformation Radio Community right there on Facebook. If you're listening, I ask that you subscribe to Life Transformation Radio. We're available on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spreaker, TuneIn, Player FM, Radio Public, Overcast, CastBox, the Himalaya app, the Google Play Music app. Wherever you're comfortable listening to podcasts, please subscribe to the show and help support the mission here at Life Transformation Radio. My guests are entrepreneurs, speakers, business owners, coaches, other podcasters, and authors who are amazing people and are impacting the world around them. And my guest today does exactly that. If you have any questions for any of the guests that I bring on the show, call us up at 657-383-1109. Again, the number, if you have any questions for us during our live broadcast, call us up at 657-383-1109. And with that, please help welcome my guest for today, Tim Allison. Tim, welcome to Life Transformation Radio.
Sean, I'm pumped to be here.
I am super excited, man. I was on your show, Screw the Naysayers, and we had a great conversation. I felt like it went really, really well, and I had to have you on this show to get the other side of it. And so I can't wait to dive in and dig a little deeper than what we did before on your show.
Yeah, it'd be a lot of fun.
So the name of this episode is Screw the Naysayers with podcast host Tim Allison. Tim is a lifelong entrepreneur, business mentor, author, and host of Screw the Naysayers podcast. At the age of 21, Tim walked away from a six-figure sales job and moved to a tiny fishing village in Nova Scotia, Canada. The naysayers laughed when he started his own business. They stopped laughing when his sales topped $10 million. Today, Tim advises experienced business and military leaders seeking to transition to the world of self-employment. His podcast is designed to encourage people to shatter self-limiting beliefs and live the life they want. His website is Screw the Naysayers, N-A-Y-S-A-Y-E-R-S, Screw the Naysayers. And LinkedIn, Facebook, Instagram is all right there in the show. Connect with him and subscribe to his podcast as well. So, Tim, the first question I have to ask, and I believe is the most important question you can ever ask yourself, is why? So what is your deep why for what you do?
Yeah, thanks for that question, Sean. And it's a great way to sort of kick off a conversation. If I can, I'm going to be a little different here, and I'm going to give you two answers, because the highest level answer, you know, Sean, is, I think, and it took me a while to figure this one out, I'm not going to say that it came that early easily, but I think for all of us, our highest level why is finding a way to help other people. I mean, I think that's our purpose, you know, in life, for having been, you know, put on this planet. And certainly it's something that, because of all the wonderful interviews I've had on my show, that when I talk to the people that have achieved, you know, really remarkable things in so many different ways, it's not all just about business or whatever, but so many different ways, that at the core of it is their desire to help others. And so if you were to ask me my why within the context of, you know, everything that I'm doing at this stage in my life, then the answer would be, you know, that I really seek to encourage people to design their own life rather than to, you know, design a career and then try to figure out, you know, where life fits into it. I guess that would sum it up.
Got it. I like it. So how does that translate into your past and your current life? I mean, is it right at the forefront? Is it the same as it was 5 or 10 or 15 years ago? I feel like we go through these seasons, right? And my why's changed a couple times based on that season, but my core why has always remained the same. Have you felt like that?
Yeah, no, I think you're spot on. I mean, I've been self-employed, Sean, for the last 30 years and almost 31 years. But, you know, I mean, I'm not going to lie, when I was 31 and starting out with no customers and no products and two kids under the age of 5 to feed and you know, my wife at home mostly raising them, my focus was on, you know, growing my business and you know, establishing, you know, myself and paying my bills and getting our future, you know, somewhat secured. And you know, but I'm 61, I'll be 62 in a little over another month. And at this stage of my life, you know, where I'm spending my time is far more focused on, you know, sharing with people, you know, how much joy I got out of being able to decide that to recognize that there are no absolutes. You know, that was my big problem, Sean. Like when I was not stuck, I had a really good sales job. I was in my late 20s. I was in the top 2% of wage earners in my country. It's just that I missed this little rural fishing village and I was, you know, really not handling the situation well. I was abusing alcohol. My kids were around, but I was never there. You know, so from the time that I left, the thing I struggled with was this belief that I either had to have this crazy, exciting, good paying job, or I could have a lifestyle and, you know, be present with a present parent and raise my family, you know, with my wife more collaboratively, but that I somehow couldn't do both. And
right.
It's a long answer, man, but that's what I want people to realize, that it's not true. You know, I mean, there aren't those absolutes. It's never one or the other.
Got it. That makes so much sense. And I totally resonate with that message. And I think I just need to hear it just a little more. What I like about what we do is I am the host and you host on your side. And I feel like I learn just as much from the guest as the guest might learn from me, because I might say something, they might say something. And I love the conversation that can be had on this platform called the podcast, right? I mean,
I'm sorry to interrupt you there. I didn't mean to, but I mean, look, man, it's been transformational for me. I mean, without a question,
yeah.
You know, starting this podcast has been the best professional development activity of my entire life. And I openly admit that I learn like way more listening to my guests than I ever feel like I'm able to contribute, even, you know, as a guest myself. It's just, I don't know. It stretches your mind. It forces you to look at things differently. It forces you to, you know, to really look inward and be honest in our self-awareness, you know, and everything else. And then it's inspirational, isn't it? Because everywhere we turn, we meet people that are just, you know, they're doing miraculous things. And many times, and certainly on my show, a lot of them have overcome insane adversity, like insane problems. I mean, you listen to that and you think, you listen to their stories and the way their voice is still upbeat, you know, and stuff like that. And you think, well, if that didn't keep them down, how could anything be holding me back? I'm not facing anything close to what a lot of these people are describing.
Yeah. One of my top rated episodes was an episode I did well over a year ago. And it's, I mean, leaps and bounds above. I mean, I've had top people on my show. You know, I've had, you know, Tom Ziegler, who's Zig Ziegler's son. Had Bruce Buffer from the UFC. I mean, there's been like major players on my show my most downloaded, most listened to, most talked about show was Trish Roberts, who has suffered with MS for the past 20 years. Mm-hmm. And she is now a women's coach for those women who are suffering from MS. She's their advocate. I'm like, yeah. Oh, I love that. And you would not believe the outpouring support. I mean, it's great to hear from, you know, from the primetime players, but it just blows me away. A show that nobody knows who this guest is, but they resonate with their story and they resonate with the power of that story. And that's why I really love what I do, because I can give them a platform to tell the story and one person hears it, changes their life.
Yeah, absolutely. Me too, man. And it's interesting too, because I mean, I know in my case, when I started the show, you know, I mean, I had that overall goal of helping people to shatter self-limiting beliefs, to let them encourage them if they had a dream that, you know, find a way to make it happen type of thing. But having been self-employed most of my life and, you know, entrepreneurship is my life, I really thought that the primary focus of the show would be entrepreneurship. And, you know, I would say about 40 to 50% of my guests, that's central to the, you know, to the story. But I've attracted, the brand has just somehow attracted all sorts of people with really interesting stories. I mean, you know, and I think around episode, for me, it was right around episode 15 or something, Sean. It was really early. And I interviewed a lady by the name of Madeline Black.
I love her.
Yeah. And I was nervous for, you know, her story. I mean, I was so nervous.
Oh, yeah.
Because here I have this woman coming on her show, and this was right after she'd published her book, Unbroken. And, you know, for those that don't know, Madeline, when she was 13 years old, was raped by a couple of young men and in a brutal, brutal attack. It was far more than just a sexual. So, like, she came so close to dying. And then it describes that in a lot of detail that would make a lot of people uncomfortable, and particularly men and particularly parents of daughters. And I think it should be mandatory reading, to be honest. You know, and then she goes on to talk about her journey of discovery and how now she's, you know, at that time she had not even done her first TED talk. Now she's sort of going traveling the world, but, you know, she's out there taking her message of resilience and, you know, and of being able to forgive yourself, not worrying about the other people, but forgiving yourself and how to find a gift in adversity, no matter how horrific it might be type of thing. But I was terrified, man. I was absolutely terrified. She was such a classy person to talk to. After that episode, I have had, you know, I don't know, dozens of people that have faced really tough circumstances growing up. And sometimes it comes up even when I don't even realize it's going to come up. You know, I'm talking to someone about their business success or whatever, but we start probing and next thing you know, boom, here it is. So I don't know. I just feel really touched. I'm actually, in October, there's an organization called the Women of Inspiration here in Canada, and they're having a national awards banquet in Toronto. And I've been nominated for that organization for a Power Partner Award for the work I do with the podcast interviewing strong women leaders. And, you know, I mean, I put it up there. I mean, I booked the airline ticket the day the nomination came in. So I don't know. We're really blessed. I mean, I just look at it every day. I have this opportunity to talk to people like you and Madeline and, you know, and so many others. And it just motivates you to want to help others as well, to do more so that, you know, it isn't just about the abstract theory, but helping people with the, you know, with the actual implementation.
Yeah, I firmly agree. So many times, you know, somebody will say, I really like that person you had on the show, or they'll recommend somebody, go, you know what, after the show, I know somebody who has a story, and you're like, oh, very cool. So let's dive into that part right there, that transformational moment. I believe that everything happens for a reason and nothing is by chance. So what is a transformational moment that you feel happened and triggered the next chain of events that really put you on the path to what you're doing today?
Yeah, that's an easy one for me to answer, because I would have been about just shy of my 30th birthday. But at the time, you know, our second child was on the way. I was in senior sales management position with a company. It was an international company, but we were in the you know, basically the Canadian operation, and I was about 10 years younger than my boss, who was the CEO, and I won't use his name, but, you know, he would always say to me, and he's the only guy I ever let get away with calling me Timmy, because I don't really like him, but he was a big 6'4" bear of a guy, and somehow it didn't even feel insulting, you know, but I can still remember him, Sean. He would always used to say to me, he'd say, Timmy, you know, I can't believe how far you've come in such a short time. I wish I'd been where you are when I was your age. And that used to make me feel so good. I honestly, you know, I was a mini boss, and I truly, truly wanted to emulate him. I'd been on this pursuit. I mean, like a lot of people in their 20s, I just, you know, I've been told that this is the path to success. And I got on that corporate ladder, and he wasn't the kindest person. And certainly in those days, I would say I wasn't either. It was, if you kind of got in my way, I was going to stomp you given the chance. I mean, it was, that's the way the business world seemed to be in those days, man. I'm just being candid. But to answer your question, I remember, you know, one morning I got on a plane and I flew from Toronto to Montreal, which is, it's only about an hour flight, but it's actually about a 6-hour trip by the time you go from downtown Toronto to the airport,
yeah,
the flight, the taxiing at both ends, and then a drive in at the other end. Eh? And I no sooner than walked into the office in Montreal, and there was, this is actually before the days of cell phones, and there's a message waiting for me. So I call back to the Toronto office, and my boss's executive assistant says, you have to come back to Toronto. I said, I just got here. She said, you have to come back to Toronto. I can't tell you why. Just come back to Toronto. So, you know, grumbling, not very happy, I take, you know, call a taxi, go back out to the airport, get on a flight, get to Toronto, get in my car. But, you know, it's late in the day by the time I'm coming in the office. And right. and everybody's just standing around looking white-faced. And what the hell happened? And, you know, the reality is that my boss had been yelling on the phone, on the speakerphone, so the whole office could hear him, had actually been yelling at his child, at his 9-year-old child, giving him crap or something over the phone. And he had a heart attack, and he keeled over, and he did a face plant on his desk. And, you know, he's still
alive
to the cupboard. But I'm telling you what, I mean, all that I could, from that moment on, Sean, all I could say to myself was, that's going to be me. Except he says I'm getting there faster than he is.
Right.
And I just didn't like, you know, that. And I'm telling you what, it scared me in a way that I've talked to so many people on my show whose transformational moments have been tied to, or transitional moments have been tied to, you know, a big infrastructure rattling event in their own life. Maybe it's ill health, like a heart attack, or someone dies, or divorce, or, you know, in many ways, I think I got lucky because I was able to see it without actually having to face that consequence. But it still took me, man, a year and a half after that to get the plan together and to execute execute it, to get the courage to, you know, to drop my resignation. But in fact, I even waited until the day my boss was out of town so that he wouldn't try to talk me into staying, because I tried 3 times to quit. And each time he talked me out of it and threw a bit more money at me. And it was like, I felt like I was letting him down. You know, I mean, it was, one of those crazy moments where I knew if I didn't quit, I was going to be dead or divorced, you know, in the next 5 years.
Oh,
probably
wow.
Both. Well, I really believe that. I was killing myself, man. But I certainly was, you know, not being a good husband. I was never around. But, you know, I knew that I had to quit, but at the same time, I felt guilty as hell. And I also felt like there must be something wrong with me, because here I had achieved everything that my generation had been raised to believe was what your goal in life was. You know, graduate from high school, go to college, get a university degree, join a corporation, move up that corporate ladder as fast as you could. I mean, I was the poster child, and I had executed everything. You know, I'd done way better than anybody else in my graduating class from high school. I mean, I was light years ahead of everybody in terms of earnings, except for one guy who ended up playing in the National Hockey League. I expect he was making a bit more money than me.
Yeah.
But, you know, the rest. And yet, I mean, you know, I was just destroying myself. So, you know, it was that moment for sure. It was that moment for sure when I thought, well, that's me, and I can't stick around to, you know, to have that happen.
Yeah, I don't blame you. I don't blame you at all. I was a drill instructor from 2009 to 2013. I was living off of 2 monsters a day, and I was drinking the big twist top ones. It was like 20 ounce or something like that, whatever the bigger ones are. And one day I had to go to the hospital, and I had pain all over, just excruciating pain from like my chest down, like all the way to my legs. Turns out I developed kidney stones.
Oh,
wow. I wasn't drinking water.
Yeah.
And I was just drinking Monster. And the Monsters that I was drinking, because I'd done it for every day for 2 years. And I never drank water or Gatorade unless I was like super dehydrated. That was like all they had. Mm. And there's like a P chart, like in the latrine, there's a P chart. It says if it's this color, I was consistently brown all the time.
Oh, wow.
Consistently brown. And it was almost, we wore it like a badge of honor. Like, look at me, this big, bad drill instructor, brown sludge. You know, like it was just, I don't know. I look back at it, I'm like, how stupid. But, you know, those 3 years that I was doing this to myself, it almost caught me. And I was in the hospital with kidney stones. I get done with that. Yeah. And then my pancreas started having problems, and then I wasn't like filtering things the wrong way. Then my adrenal glands got enlarged, and then it was just like one thing after another for a couple of months, you know, a few months. It was like one thing after another. And they said, dude, you got to stop. And then since that, you know, since 2013, at the end of my tour, I only drank like water, Gatorades, and things like that. I never even drank a soda. And I still to this day have not drink one energy drink. And as the science comes out now, 6 years later, it says that those things are really, really bad for you. And this is what your body does. I'm like, hey, I did that.
Yeah,
it was me.
Yeah. Tell me something I don't already know.
So I had to stop. So it's these moments that if it's not happening to you, you see somebody else, you take a step back and go, you know, am I really living?
Yeah.
Right? Am I really living for the moment, or am I just getting by? And I don't want to just do things to get by. I want to do things in the right way, in the right order. So I had to stop the Monsters. I had to stop the energy drinks. I just, you know, I mean, we ate like crap too. I'm talking like, I don't feel like making dinner. Let's just eat some like hamburger helper, like, you know, frozen stuff. Like we eat now, it's healthy, healthy food. You know, everything's pretty much scratch. Hardly anything out of a box. Hardly anything that's frozen. I mean, really, it's like not even the prepackaged chicken, you know? So I believe that the transformation of moments puts on the path to where we're going. But I'm curious, how are you now using that to elevate the world around you?
Yeah. And that's why I'm having so much fun with my podcast and with the business mentoring that I'm doing. Because so basically, you know, after getting here with, you know, starting a, I didn't have a choice but to start my own business, Sean, because where I live and I still live is it's a little fishing village, man. There are like 300 people in this village, and there are other similar small villages that are along the coast here. We're not that isolated, but, you know, certainly when I arrived, I mean, and even to a large extent today, if, you know, for men, the options to work were mostly, you know, good, hardworking men, but they were lobster fishermen. They, you know, they worked in the woods with trees. They were in construction. I mean, and you can't, this is not a visual show, but I mean, I got small little hands and the like, I mean, this guy was not cut out for that kind of work. So, I mean, I had no choice but to, you know, create my own job. And it's interesting because, you know, I you said in my bio at the front, and I do use the hook that, you know, the naysayers laughed when I started the business, and they stopped laughing when my sales topped, you know, 10 million. But what I always then say is, once I've got people's attention, is that it was never about the money. And it's certainly not the thing I'm proudest of. The thing I'm proudest of is that I was able to create a life that aligned with the things I valued in life. So, for example, I mean, I had two young kids, and I wanted to be a present parent. So I wanted the independence that would allow me to schedule my own time. And that meant, like, for example, it's Canada, so we play a lot of hockey up here. And, you know, my son was a hockey player, and they played every weekend from about October 9th until, you know, probably the beginning of April. And I can tell you, Sean, for the 12 years that he played minor hockey, I didn't miss a single game. And I was traveling a lot.
Wow.
It was often I'd be, you know, across the country somewhere, or down in the States, or even over in the UK or something. But I always flew home on the Friday, even if it cost more. And it often did in those days cost way more to fly home if you didn't stay the Saturday night kind of nonsense that the airlines used to do. And And the same thing with my daughter, who was, you know, in the soccer and basketball, mostly through the school. So I was the guy that was always a volunteer driver. That 2 p.m, the teams could jump in my van, minivan, and off we would go. And now I still work my butt off. I mean, after we got home, I was probably at my office or in, you know, down on the basement or whatever, working sometimes till 10 or 10:30 at night. It's not that I didn't work.
Wow.
But I really wanted to prioritize the time, and it's funny. I was on a podcast, a webcast yesterday with my daughters because she's also an entrepreneur. Like, we're 30 years apart.
And, that's awesome.
And so I was saying that I thought she had an advantage growing up in the house with an entrepreneur because she would have had a sense for how hard it was. And I'm thinking she would have seen the times that I came in all stressed and everything. It's just the reality. I'd like to say it wasn't, but it is. And she smiled when they asked her, and she said, well, he seems to think that that's what I remember. She said, what I remember is in the summertime when we were at the lake, you know, with a little camper trailer thing, and the other mothers and the kids were around, but all the other dads were working. But my dad was there with his laptop or, you know, and with his cell phone and a beer, you know. So that stuff was really important to me. And so it's a rambling answer to the question you asked, but, you know, I believe right now, Sean, for so many people, that the best path forward is going to lie in self-employment. I feel that's especially true of mature leaders. So I see so many, you know, people in corporate or military service that are coming out, you know, after having spent a significant amount of time in leadership positions. And, you know, they're going to be offered all sorts of jobs in the private sector. But what certainly at least the military folks will. The corporate guys, when they get squeezed out, they've got a harder problem because typically, you know, it's more difficult, you know, to get that next job, and it usually pays you a lot less. But even with a lot of the guys that I've talked to that have, you know, come out of the military after the 15 to 20 years, those jobs for the big corporations haven't always worked out the way they thought they might.
Right.
And a lot of them are, you know, I had one guy, a client I'm working with now, he said, look, for the last 18 years, you know, people told me what time to get up and when to go to bed and where the food was and all that. I don't really want to be told anymore. You know, I'd like to. So I think that, you know, that this is a group that really needs to embrace self-employment because we're seeing all this energy from young entrepreneurs, all these, you know, tech wizards and everything, and all the more power to them. I'm so thrilled to see the, you know, young people taking the path of entrepreneurship. But there's so many guys, you know, Sean, 40, 45, 50 years of age, who would make kick-ass entrepreneurs. But, you know, even though they were successful in their careers elsewhere, there's just something that holds them back. And it's because at that stage they say, well, I got responsibilities and, you know, and they start listing off all the reasons why it would be nice, but. And, you know, I was doing that for 2 years before I finally quit. It would be nice, but. I mean, you know, I'm helping people by, you know, breaking the process down, by helping them figure out how they could use their skills and experience. And because let's look at it this way. There's millions of problems in this world that need to be solved, like almost an infinite number of problems that need to be solved. So that creates opportunities for anybody who can think, you know, and wisdom and experience and life experience and everything else gives those of us that have more of it a significant advantage in coming up with, you know, with solutions. We can't get to, you know, we should never get intimidated by the technology. Oh, it's going to be too hard to figure out the technology part of that. There's people that can help you with that. It's figuring out the solutions where the gap exists. And I think there's just massive opportunity, you know, for folks that, you know, that aren't getting the rewards they would hope to get in, you know, in private sector jobs, or just, for me, you see, self-employment was the only way. There's three things I really wanted when I looked at designing my life. I wanted the independence we talked about. I wanted the income, you know, Sean. I wanted to be, you know, I mean, I like money. I make no bones about it. I like making money. For me, it was never about acquisitions. You can come into my house and you're going to see 20-year-old furniture in some of the rooms and stuff like that. It's just But I've traveled the world and my kids have traveled the world. And, you know, like, so for me, income facilitated experiences, you know, and to meet people. And it also allows us to do things like host, you know, run podcasts and stuff like that, you know, so that you can get involved in helping people. So I wanted the independence, the income. And then I really wanted to have work that I felt was meaningful, that was important to me. Because for me anyway, I know that the only real way for me to have sustained happiness is if I have those three things. You know, when I can have those things that I can just concentrate on, you know, on staying true to my core values and, you know, and being a present husband and parent and good friend and how, you know, just making decisions based on what's in the best interest of others. But you need those three things. And I just happen to believe that right now there aren't many companies out there that are offering that combination of things to at least to enough of their employees.
Oh, very true. Nailed it. Absolutely. What stood out for me is that you're on the vacation. Yeah, might have a laptop, might have a phone. You know, so I retire in 2 years.
Yeah, man.
My life, I guess I don't want to say dream life because it seems too cliche. I want to work in between all of the vacations.
Sure.
While other people are taking vacation away from their life and away from their work, I really want to work in between all the vacations. Forever.
Look, you know what? I went through about a 6-year period, Sean, where I think my wife and I pretty much, I don't know. It depends how extensive you meant in terms of the vacations, but we were going to Europe, you know, 3 times a year for 2 to 3 week trips. And our kids were, you know, out finished university and all that kind of stuff. And we were at that stage and we did, so we were traveling on big trips, like 2 to 3 times a year and then some local stuff. So I can really absolutely relate. And I tell you what, in those days, the work didn't come with me. If I, you know, we went to Italy for 22 days. I went to Italy for 22 days. I didn't turn on a TV, but you know, I think as we touched on earlier, things sort of evolve and change. And I'm now, finding that more of the travel, partly just because of mobility issues that have come with some of the physical challenges I have. The big adventure trips are not so easy. We spend a lot of time camping. So for example, this summer in Nova Scotia and by spring, mm-hmm. summer, fall, like over about a three and a half month period, I'm going to spend 42 nights camping, with my wife. But on those trips, I bring my laptop. I mean, you know, she sits there at certain stages when we're not, you know, walking or going to the beach or whatever, and she's reading a book. Well, I prefer to be, you know, working on something related to my podcast or something, but I'm still sitting there in a comfortable, zero gravity chair, looking at the ocean, you know, waiting for the campfire and the camp food and doing something I enjoy. So, you know, now I'm at a stage where things are more integrated, but I just think it comes at all stages of life. And what I just want, it's back to that same theme. I just want everybody to make conscious choices of what they want. So I see no reason why you can't accomplish what you've set out to do. That's a very attainable, attainable goal. And I commend you for it. I mean, it's because those experiences will just simply enrich you. And I always tread very carefully with anything that might even be construed as political, but I don't mean it that way. But we live in a world where we don't have enough tolerance, you know, where there's so many of us that think we've got it figured out and everybody else is wrong. I go to enough different cultures and travel around enough, you start to realize that nobody's got it figured out. You know, we're all just, things we can learn from everybody. And I think it gives humility. And so anyway, I'm just a big fan of doing that, having those kind of experiences.
So my mom, you know, the same, like she ended up selling her business. My mom's been an entrepreneur, you know, for as long as I can remember. You know, she's taken these jobs and she'll just get a job just to kind of build up some money because she's in the medical field. You know, she's been a nurse forever. Well, she had started and bootstrapped her own home health care business. Started hiring, started running she was doing everything. She was the payroll person. I mean, she had secretaries and other nurses and faculty and stuff, but she was the payroll person. She was the boss. She made the final decisions. She made the, schedule. She had the contact. She contacted people and did, like, she was just crushing it from like 6 a.m. to 10 o'clock at night. She would be doing this. And I'm like, Mom, I don't think that she was, you don't understand. You're not an entrepreneur. And I was like 17 or 18. I'm like, huh. All right. Well, then I started building my businesses and then I was doing the same thing, know, it'd be like 10 o'clock, 11 o'clock, 1 in the morning, still working on stuff. And I'm like, I don't, it's got a better pay. But she's like, nope, this is the way, you know. So I just outsourced everything I didn't want to do.
Yeah.
And then I ended up making more money, which was counterintuitive, right? Like, I'm paying somebody, but I'm getting, because it frees me up to capitalize on what I'm good at. When I brought this to my mom, she's like, oh, no, I got to do it all. And I got to do, you know, 10 o'clock at night, she's doing charts and stuff. I'm like, what are you doing? Relationships suffered. Her health suffered. Eventually, she just sold it. She goes, I can't keep doing this. I'm like, no, you can't. So she sold it. And now she's just a consultant for home healthcare businesses. But I think it's cool that she puts so much time. First 2 years, she's in business. She's getting top 25 awards. Top 25 best business in Michigan.
Yeah.
I'm like, that's awesome.
Yeah. That's,
it works so much.
You know, here's the thought that comes to mind when you describe that story is that, you know, Sean, I would put to you that for most people now, anyway, going forward, the traditional forms of entrepreneurship, like you just described, are, I don't want to say they're obsolete, but it feels to me like they're going the way of the horse-drawn carriage. Because when you think about those, like, you know, the kind of obligations that your mom had to take on, or you think about, you know, if you think about, you know, retail or manufacturing and the kind of upfront capital investments and everything else that's required, you know, even network marketing. I mean, if you look at that and you compare it to the kind of business I was describing, which is to create a business around an idea, you know, around Sean and around a problem that Sean can help the world solve,
right,
or help others in the world solve. Those businesses, you know, require almost no startup capital. They do take typically some
sure.
investment to get off the ground, but not in the way of, you know, expensive equipment or leasehold improvements or any of that kind of stuff. They typically have much higher, you know, profit margins, which means you can't outsource, you know, lower cost or lower skill activities without being disrespectful to people, or things that other people do better than us, you know, faster than us. You know, so I think that that's really the future of entrepreneurship. And I think there's a window open here. I'm not saying it's at any risk of closing, but I think there's way too many people sleeping through the reality that this window is now open to, you know, to go out and you can scale a business like that while still bootstrapping it, because you can because the margins are so good, you can reinvest the profits back into your business. But, you know, you got to come into it realistically. You have to be willing to defer some gratification at the beginning. You know, in other words, grind. I mean, I'm not one of these guys who's going to tell you that it's a 2 hours a day. I got into it pretty good with somebody on LinkedIn the other day. I finally just blocked them because I got tired of the argument. But the thing is, I'm tired of people, you know, especially people that have, Sean, that have never, you know, run a business like your mom or, you know, or
right.
you or me. They've never run a business in their life. But they're out there advocating, I got this magic system that you can work 2 hours and quit that corporate job. Don't take a job. You know, pay me and I'll show you how you can work 2 hours a day, 4 or 5 days a week, spend the rest of the time lying on the beach.
Right.
And people buy it. People are sending this guy money. And I'm calling people out. I mean, I won't call people out by name, but I'm calling people out who are sending false messages out there to people. Starting a business is hard work. Starting a business is, you know, takes an enormous amount of mental strength. You know, you have to, resilience, you know. You're going to make mistakes. You're going to get taken advantage of for the odd time because you can't shut yourself down and not listen to anybody. And unfortunately, some of the people you're going to talk to don't have your best interest in mind. You know, you're going to, but if you are pure in purpose and you know, get a framework and a process and get some guidance to get pointed in the right direction, there's amazing, you know, amazing things that can happen. But it doesn't happen overnight, and it sure as hell doesn't, result in you working a couple hours a day. And I don't know, man. It's the thing that's really got me, you know, cranked up these days is I'm just seeing too many people being – because the impact, Sean, is that when people have started their own business, and they're working their ass off and they still haven't got the rewards they were looking for. And then this guy's saying, well, what are you doing? You're an idiot. It's almost like working hard is. Don't you think that sometimes it feels like people are telling us that if you work hard, that it's bad?
I think that came from the Tim Ferriss world, you know, 4-hour work week. Everybody's like, oh, I work 4 hours a week.
You know, I'm the only guy who's doing 4-hour work week is Tim Ferriss.
Right.
making all the money off of. I'm sorry. That's it.
The only way
we're not living in Disneyland. I mean,
the only way, right? The only way that I can see someone working 4 hours a week, okay, is if you're selling $100,000 programs or goods or right. Like, I'm sure that if you're a steel factory and you're creating if you're selling steel by the pound, you know what I mean, to people who are going to melt it down and, you know, build cars or tanks or something, right? Sure that me with all this steel, I'm sure if I sell large quantities, millions of dollars of steel, I could just drag and drop, done, I'm out, right? I'm sure that if I'm selling $100,000 programs, that maybe I can get away with that. But most people are not.
Well,
they're not.
I'm going to go further, and I got in trouble on this in social media the other day too. But
I love it.
Well, here's the thing. I mean, we can't get quantifiable evidence here because people are not honest about it. But it's my 100%. Belief. It's my belief, man, that the vast majority of these social media superstars that we're seeing out there that are bragging about all the money they're making and how they can help you get rich and all that kind of stuff, the vast majority of them are full of it. That if you could if you could really look at their bank statements, half of them probably are struggling trying to figure out where to pay their light bill. I've had stories like that. I had talked to somebody yesterday who had been approached by one of these so-called gurus to ask if he would handle all of the digital marketing for free in return for a stake in the business, because he didn't even have the money to pay somebody to manage his social media. Well, I mean, if you're at this mammoth superstar, it's rampant. I mean, I really believe that we have legitimized scamming people. Like, you know, we don't call it a scam anymore because this, you know, they always say, well, the results are dependent on you. And that's true. If you or I or anybody else is working with or mentoring or advising someone through a framework and everything, we don't ultimately control the implementation. If you don't actually go do it, you know, and learn during the process. But the reality is there's a whole lot of people that are going into this that there's no credible reason to believe they can actually deliver the results they promise. And in fact, you know, they don't. And what's bad about it is, as they say, everybody gets discouraged because they're grinding around, their business is just slowly growing, you know, and it's getting a little better each month and all that kind of stuff, which is, and then they look around and they get discouraged because they go, oh, wow, you know, Joe over here or Bill or Mary or whatever, I mean, they're just killing it and they've only been at it for a month. They're just, you know, how do we fact check social media? You know, we don't.
Yeah, right. Right. So do you know, I literally had, I was speaking in Minneapolis and I had a couple meetings and one of my coaching clients is there in Minneapolis. I just happened to be speaking there. And I met up with a couple of people, was mentoring, having a meeting with them. And I said, how are you currently earning revenue? What is your revenue streams? You have to have multiple revenue streams to build wealth. First of all, you should have some passive income. Secondly, your multiple streams of income need to be coming in pretty regularly. I said, so what are your multiple streams of income? And he gave me the typical answer, like, well, you know, I'm an entrepreneur and a business owner for this one thing, and I get paid for this. I'm like, what is the revenue that's coming in? Is it $5? Is it $100? Is it $1,000? What's the frequency? I'm trying to, like, get his numbers all straight. And then it comes to light. Well, I mean, I've got these investments, and I've got my one passive income. If you got dividend stocks, might be $45 a month, but it's dividend stocks. They pay. Then it comes down to, and then I got this other thing that I do. You know, I work for this one guy to do this one thing. I'm like, right. And he's like, yeah, I got the job. And I was like, so you have a job, but you don't advertise that. Well,
yeah, exactly.
Well, I mean, I got the job. I'm like, right. So I'm learning more and more as I dig into people's stories that they actually have a job that they don't promote that is funding their side hustle and making it seem like their side hustle is their entrepreneurship full time. Right.
Exactly.
And it's just like the more and more I ask questions and dig in, you know, the more it just becomes blatantly obvious that everybody's lying.
Well, you know what? You know? I, you know, Here's the way I approach, because I still have a coach today. Like, I pay somebody.
Yeah, so do I.
You know, pretty substantial money. You know, I believe in them. But here's the criteria I have, Sean. And if people would follow something similar to this, then there'd be a lot fewer of us lamenting the loss of money. And it's quite simple. I mean, whenever I'm, you know, somebody who's asking for my money, the first question I ask myself is, have you done exactly what I want to do? Like, I want to see proof that, you know, that you are, you know, have achieved the outcome that I'm looking for. And that doesn't mean just you posting it on social media. I want proof. The second thing, you know, so for example, if somebody's going to advise me on starting a business, I want to be able to say, well, how many businesses have you owned? How long were they in business? I can point to four businesses over 31 years, you know, continuous, one to the next. You know? But I'm not saying it needs to be me, but I'm saying that, you know, that prove to me that, you know, that you know, if you're going to advise me on starting a business, that you've actually started a business. And then I want proof that you've actually been able to help other people do what you want to do. And if they can actually, you know, successfully answer those two questions, and then you can do a solid reference check. In other words, you've either really gotten to know them well through a lot of interaction on social media and stuff like that, on LinkedIn or something like that, over an extended period of time, maybe spoken to them several times, or you've got some solid references. If you do those three things, you're going to be pretty safe. But the dilemma is that same age group that I was talking about earlier that I primarily work with, and I'm sort of at the top end of it, but we're vulnerable because we lack confidence in our ability to compete with things related to technology. Like, it's almost like we think, well, you know, these kids were born, and by kids, that's anybody 35 and under, you know, like they were born with phones in their mouth, and they can do eight things at the same time when I can't even do one type of thing. And it gets in your head, and it's almost like I have to say to people, look, guys, we're not stupid. We just didn't, you know, wake up one day and say we're stupid and we can't learn this stuff. We can learn this stuff. And, you know, and we can, once we've learned it, if we want to hire somebody else to do it, that's fine. But you got to learn it and understand it. And because once you get past that, you know, the opportunities are significant, but it leaves us exposed. And it really does. And it bothers me. And that's why I'm talking about it a lot on social media, on my podcast here today with you. I'm tired of hearing stories, you know, one-on-one from good, hardworking people who have saved up some, you know, what for them is a lot of money, and dropped $5,000 or $10,000 down to work with somebody, sometimes more, and gotten nothing for it, you know, and it's rampant, you know. And I don't even think I don't think these folks even realize that they don't see that they're doing anything wrong. It's sort of a buyer beware, you know, environment that they seem to have adopted. And if they go in well-intended, well, I wanted to help them just because I couldn't. I mean, I did my best type of thing. That's not good enough when you're making a brand promise that says you can deliver something. You know, right. I mean, if everybody was selling us a car, you know, as soon as we drive off the lot, it falls apart on the road. You know, that brand promise, you might tell us it's the best car in the world. We're going to figure it out real fast and not buy it again. But with services, it's tough.
Yeah, that was one of the limiting factors of, do I really want to, like, I'm super content with literally getting booked to speak, doing my radio show, and you know, kind of teaching along the way, like I do on social media, kind of give out some content. Here's my strategies. Here's what's working. You know, whatever. Perfectly comfortable with that. But then somebody was like, well, you know, can you show me how to get booked? Can you show me? I'm like, yeah, sure, I'll show you. And then I was like, well, maybe I'll get paid for it. Or maybe I'll. So it just kind of slowly went from there. And now people contact me all the time. Like, hey, I heard you're the speaker guy. I heard you're the, you know, TEDx guy. Like, you get people TEDx talks and, you know, whatever. I'm like, yeah, I can. And the first thing I always tell them, you know, when they ask me, is like, well, when can I expect it? Or when can I? I was like, nothing's guaranteed. You might never, ever get one. Just saying, you might not ever get a TEDx talk. My price to work with me is this much. This is what this costs. For my TEDx, I say it's a one-time fee. Why is it a one-time fee? Because nothing's guaranteed. And I'm not going to sell you something that isn't guaranteed. I like my reputation and I like my word. So what I'm going to do instead, one-time investment, and then I'm going to work with you until we get one. Might be a year. Might be 6 months. Could be a month. Could be 2 weeks. Nobody ever knows. So that is how I've approached that, as, well, you said he could deliver, And the first thing I say is nothing's guaranteed. You want to get on a podcast? I'll get you on a podcast. Come on my show. Did I live up to my expectation? Did I tell you I'd get you on a podcast? Yes, I did. I fulfilled our contract. Technically, if you want to think about it from a bad business owner point, I kind of did just tell you I'd get you on a podcast. I got my show and I fulfilled the contract. You know. But what I don't do is sit there and go, oh, I can deliver and I can do this and I can do this. I can do this, when I know damn well that the speaker world is so volatile and so competitive. Exactly. You know what I mean? That you can never guarantee anything. I guarantee that you'll have systems and strategies in place that give you an advantage head over shoulders against everybody else who doesn't have these systems and strategies in place. But I work with speakers, and so I've worked with, you know, a handful of speakers, and they've gotten their TEDx talks, which is awesome. But that's one of the first things I'll never say I'm guaranteeing you can do, because that would just be crap.
Yeah, no, exactly. And you know, it's and the thing is, and I love the model you put out there though, dude, because I mean, the idea is I'm just gonna keep mentoring you. That's why, I mean, I will, the shortest mentoring period I'll do with somebody is 3 months. And that's if we're just focusing sort of on the startup phase and figuring out what the idea is, what your unique strengths are, how could you what the conceptualization, what would your business look like? Why would people buy from you? The core questions type of thing. But honestly, I mean, the model I much prefer is a full year, you know, because results take time and it's just impossible to predict. You know, because the other reality when you're in a startup phase with a business is the good news is it's not like you have to go out and hire a whole bunch of people or spend a whole lot of money. But what you're going to do is you're going to come up with the framework for your solution and you're going to get out there and test it. But I can't tell you how many times and different versions of it you might have to test until you get it right, because, you know, the chances are you won't get it right out of the box because you got to go out and ask people about
it. Right.
So that's why you need to be around to say, okay, well, now based on this feedback and based on what people are telling you and based on where your thought process is, what do we have to change? I mean, because that's the other thing that, you know, I wrote a post on this the other day, a LinkedIn post, but there's this myth out there that winners never quit, eh? That, you know, that it's all about perseverance. Well, you know what? We don't quit on the big goals. Like, we don't quit on, you know, on helping people or on helping, you know, people make, in my case, making that transition to self-employment. But how I get there might change 100 times, you know, before I get it right. Like, you know, and it's the same with any business. You try things, but, you know, this idea that just because something's, it's not working, but in order to be successful in business, all I have to do is keep doing it over and over and over again. That's often a recipe for a lot of lost money and ill health and everything else. And really hard to see when you're down in that rabbit hole all by yourself. And but anyway,
that's something that I talk about too. And I was like, so how long do you want to do it for? And they're like, well, I mean, what can I expect results? Like, it depends on what you want to do. Do you want to make money? I could show you right away. Depends on how much time it takes to get that money. You want to get on a podcast? I'll get you on a bunch. like immediately, you know, we'll get them scheduled. That's easy. What is it that you want? You know, and most of them is like, well, you know, I want to have a successful business. I'm like, well, I don't know what that means. What is success? I mean, my level of success and Tim's and, you know, everybody else's is going to be different. Everybody's level of success is completely different. It's objective. So tell me what you want. What is it that you don't want to achieve? Half the people don't even know. They don't even know what they want to achieve. So I have to sit there and spend 30 minutes talking to them about what success looks like for them and what does fulfillment and happiness look like. Do you want to quit your 9-to-5 or do you enjoy your 9-to-5? If you enjoy your 9-to-5, then build a side hustle and do your passions, you know, and then try to make money from your passions and then have it supplement your income. That's a great way to live. If you love your job, let's say you're a lawyer and you love your job, you don't want to leave your job. Let me know. What does it look like for you? Do you want to do something on the side? A lot of people that have side hustles, they love it. They enjoy it. You know, so self-awareness is where you got to go with that, you know, and, you know, like you always say, screw the naysayers, just do it, you know, figure out what it is that you want to do and do it. Take action. Don't talk about it, but get results.
Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah. And that, you know, and on that naysayer theme, I mean, the real issue there is, you know, people need to come to the realization that when it comes to figuring out what it is you really want in your life, then nobody else's opinion matters but your own. I mean, it's 100%. Just real. You know, I mean, And people will say, well, what about, you know, partners and stuff like that? Well, look, that's going to be part of what you want, you know, but, you know, sweating or worrying about what other people think or what their thoughts are. I mean, I did some tongue in cheek posts, you know, on LinkedIn about the kind of, you know, the advice you get. And, you know, I think one of them, you know, I caught some flack because the picture wasn't the best, but it was titled The Clueless Cheerleader. Now, I don't mean that like the cheerleader that's a sports team and all that kind of stuff. What I mean all by it, right. It's the person in life that no matter what, you tell them you got an idea, Sean, that's amazing. You should go do it tomorrow. That's awesome, man. You're going to kill it. Well, you know, it's nice to have some people in your life that who have that unconditional, faithful belief in you. Sometimes you really need that reservoir, but you really want to be careful that you don't use them as a compass for, you know, for where you're going, because they're not really necessarily giving, you know, a position to give you an informative opinion. And so the compass you should be listening to is what scares the hell out of you. What really you think, oh man, I can't possibly do that. What's causing you to make long lists of the reasons why it will fail? As soon as you hit on that idea, you hit on something that you really, really, really want to do in your life. So get off your ass and figure out what could you do today to move towards that. And like you say, take a step. Don't have to do
it
all overnight. Take a step.
Perfect. All right, Tim, take about 30 seconds and tell us where you want the listeners to go to learn more about you, the podcast, where they can hear it, and whatever else you want them to know.
Sure. It's really easy. The easiest would be just to go to Screw the Naysayers, just like it sounds, screwthenaysayers.com. And you can get, you know, obviously learn all about the coaching and mentoring I do. You can get episodes of the podcast. And, of course, the podcast, is available on, you know, iTunes, Spotify, Overcast, all of the podcast hosting, you know, platforms. And I am really active, as you might have caught a few times. I'm really active on LinkedIn, and love for people to reach out to me, you know, to there. And again, it's just Tim Allison, Allison with one L.
There you go. Love it. So as we close the show, we always close with that golden nugget. So give us one nugget of knowledge that will motivate, transcend, and inspire someone to take action today.
Yeah, I'm going to loop back to what I said at the beginning about challenging yourself to make sure that you never think in absolutes, that, you know, that you don't look at situations in life as an either or choice. And once you've made that kind of a thought process, set about designing your own life. Like, there's so many ways you can make money, you know, these days, whether, as you say, it's employment or side gig or whatever, side hustle. But, you know, design the life that you want. And if you want independence, if you want, you know, to control your income, if you want, you know, to have meaningful work and you're willing to put the work in, then I kind of think that, you know, self-employment is a path that an awful lot of folks should be, you know, really taking a serious look at, because it's been the best thing that ever happened to me, aside from, you know, meeting my wife, which led to this wonderful family I have and all that.
There you go. I love it. I love it. Hey, Tim, thank you so much for being an amazing guest. I enjoyed the conversation a lot, and I look forward to following you and your journey.
Hey, Sean, it was an absolute pleasure, man. Keep kicking it.
Yeah, you too, man. Life Transformation Radio listeners, if anything resonated with you on this episode, please go to screwthenaysayers.com. While you're there, subscribe to Tim Allison's podcast, Screw the Naysayers. LinkedIn, Facebook, Instagram, it's all right there in the show notes. Connect with him today and learn more about what he's doing. His show is absolutely phenomenal, absolutely incredible. You need to listen to his show. So as I close, I always say, live your brand. Find opportunities every day to live out the core values that you hold deep in your heart. And I call this living your brand. So until next episode, live a great life.